This episode of the Lutheran Cartographer is brought to you by the Ron Paul Homeschool Curriculum. If you're looking for a good curriculum, check it out at lutherancartographer.com/homeschool. The Lutheran Cartographer, episode 40. Welcome to the Lutheran Cartographer, the podcast where we explore what it's like to be Lutheran in different places. I'm your host, Nicholas Weber. Today we are going to Lititz, Pennsylvania to talk to Pastor Christopher Seiferlein about what it's like to be Lutheran there. Pastor Seiferlein, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me here today.
So help orient us geographically. We are in Pennsylvania. Where exactly are we?
So our congregation is in Lititz, Pennsylvania. And Lititz, Pennsylvania is in southeastern Pennsylvania. And we would be about an hour and a half from Philadelphia, 2.5 hours west of Washington, D.C., and an hour and a half away also from Baltimore. So geographically, we're in that neck of the woods, but we're in a pretty rural area, though highly populated.
I see. Help us understand what you mean by a rural area but highly populated. Just the particular community you're in is not populous, but you have all these big things around you. Is that what you mean?
I recently came from Wisconsin. 1 year ago today, I received a call to serve Mount Calvary Lutheran Church here in Lititz. The congregation I served there was in a town of 500 people. It was very rural. It's about an hour north of Milwaukee. And this congregation is in a community with, you know, tens of thousands of people. However, because of the Amish and the Mennonite in the area and the longstanding practice of farming, they in Lancaster County have retained a farming tradition because of those communities and the longstanding farming use. And so there's pockets of farms all around, but there's also a lot of people. So it's a strange kind of combination. You know, people come from New Jersey and come out to this area in order to see farms. And being that I'm from Wisconsin, you know, I see this area as rural, but not quite rural of what I experienced before. Yeah.
I see. So tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you came from Wisconsin and sort of your personal history before you came to Pennsylvania.
Sure. I was born in Detroit, Michigan, and I served congregation first in Minnesota, southeastern Minnesota. And I was called after 3 years to serve Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Adel, Wisconsin, which is 30 minutes north of Concordia University in Wisconsin, for those who know that area. I served there for 14 years and then was called here to Lancaster County. And getting back a little bit to the geographical issue or ideas of this area, Lancaster County is probably known by people as being, if they know anything about Lancaster County, it's Amish. You know, people associate, even in the Midwest, we know that Lancaster County is where the Amish are. And so you've got, you know, that in the area as well. Just north of us as well, geographically, you have the Appalachian Mountains. So we're in an area of the country called the Piedmont, which isn't terribly it's not terribly hilly. It's somewhat hilly, but the Piedmont just means hills kind of leading to the larger mountains. So about an hour north of us, you start to see larger hills that lead to the Appalachian Mountains. But I was originally in engineering, at least in schooling, 2 years in engineering, and then began the plan to enter the seminary and have served now for 17 years.
Wonderful. So tell us a little bit more about how you contrast where you are now with the other places, either for good or for ill. We've already talked about kind of the rural aspect. What else in terms of either the culture or the way that people are, how else would you contrast it with the other places you've been?
Okay. So this is where it gets a little interesting.
Okay.
In Sheboygan County, I was in Sheboygan County. We had three Lutheran Church Missouri Synod circuits in that county. And in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, many of your listeners are probably aware that a circuit is comprised of around six, seven, or eight congregations of varying sizes. In order to have a circuit, all these things are documented by the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod itself as to how what constitutes a circuit. And because it's so densely populated with Lutherans, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Lutherans, in Sheboygan County, there's three circuits. So all of my congregations in the circuit, I could get to in 15 minutes. I'm in the English district now, so that's a whole nother different thing. But we had a installation of a pastor in a circuit in Alexandria, Virginia, this Saturday. It took me 2.5 hours to get there. So it's very different. In Wisconsin, everybody has a general understanding of what it means to be a Missouri Synod Lutheran. People in the culture know a little bit about the Missouri Synod. They know of the Missouri Synod. Again, in Sheboygan County, there's around 20, 25 LCMS parishes in that county. In Lancaster County here, there's two, and one of them has around 15 individuals coming on a Sunday, so it's very small. So generally speaking, our congregation is the only viable congregation in this county. It means being a Lutheran means something different. However, in this county, you have a long-standing tradition of Lutheran congregations. Lutheran congregations in the Pennsylvania Ministerium go back to their founding by Henry Melchior Muhlenberg. So there are in Lancaster County something along the lines of 35 ELCA parishes. So in this area, people don't even know what the Missouri Synod is. Even if they're having difficulty with the teachings of their church body, they don't know much or anything about the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. So most of the time when I'm talking to people in the area, and I tell them I'm a pastor, or they see that I'm wearing my clerical collar, I'll tell them I'm a pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. You really have to emphasize that around here and explain to them what that is. I will say that it means a lot of difference too with how people in this the makeup of people in this congregation. So in this congregation, we have three groups of people. Our congregation was formed in 1904 in Lancaster, and so it comprises individuals who are longstanding members of the parish. There's not many of them, but there's some of them, a contingent that have been here a long time. It also comprises individuals from the Missouri Synod that have moved here because of job-related changes. And we have a good contingent of individuals who are seeking for a Missouri Synod congregation in this area. The third contingent are converts who have come to be a part of our congregation through listening to Issues, etc., have come to our congregation based on possibly not being satisfied with the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. Now, what this means is something very different. In my previous congregation, the identity of people in that congregation was largely formed by their family members being part of that congregation for a long time. There wasn't much change in the community. There weren't a lot of individuals moving to the area. It was pretty static. People didn't visit the congregation. And people were a member of the congregation because they've always been a member of the congregation, or they knew a lot about that congregation. It wasn't necessarily always based on confession. It was based on you know, their practice and their history of being associated with that congregation. In addition, in the congregation that I previously served, when individuals would interact with people on a daily basis in the community, they would be interacting with individuals that they grew up with. They'd be interacting with individuals that that they regularly saw. These individuals, even though they may have been members of a different congregation, mostly Roman Catholic or Lutheran, they shared the same values. They shared the same way of looking at life. And so they didn't have, this is a strange thing to say, but they didn't need church for a social outlet. I don't know how to quite put that. But in this congregation here, people in their lives are interacting with individuals of different cultures, different backgrounds, different philosophies, different ideals. And so it creates a sense of identity. People have to want to be here to come here. And so ultimately, it creates a different sense of community. Practically speaking, if you did something social in my previous congregation, it wasn't necessary that people would actually be interested in something like that. They've got lots of social outlets with individuals who are very like-minded with them. Here in this congregation, that's a difference. People need a little bit of respite from the storm, as it were, a little bit of an oasis from what they experience on a day-to-day basis.
That makes sense. Now, let's talk about what are some of the best things about being in Lillitz.
Yeah, Lillitz. It's kind of a hard, yeah. There's a video of newscasters in Chicago mispronouncing that, so...
All right, I can be added to the reel then.
Exactly. Best things about the area. Okay, so best things about the area, you know, I'm in an area of the country with a lot of history. An hour away is Gettysburg. I'm within a drivable distance of a lot of Civil War battlefields. There's a Civil War museum in Harrisburg. Haven't been there yet, only been here less than a year, so haven't quite ventured that far. And things more recently with COVID have resulted in a lot of closures with museums. So I can be in Washington, D.C., as I said, in 2.5 hours. I can go to Baltimore. I can be in Philadelphia, you know, within an hour and a half. Being in this area means, I kind of joke around that in the Midwest sometimes your local attraction is something akin to the largest ball of twine, you know, the roadside attractions are popular in the Midwest. Well, they don't really need those around here because of their history. You can drive down in historic Lancaster and simply pass by a historical marker that states that the building that you're idling in traffic next to was used to house Revolutionary War troops, you know. The buildings that you see, very colonial in nature, a lot of history in this area. You also have, in the area, haven't ventured as far as much far beyond an hour or two away, but you have the Appalachian Trail and a lot of hiking areas as well. You've got the mountains. So in the Midwest, you don't have the mountains. At least I have them out here. So those are a few interesting things: historical, outdoor activities, and being in the nation's capital. You know, pretty quickly as well. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, you've already talked about some of the cultural differences that your parishioners often feel the need to come in order to interact with like-minded people. What are some of the other challenges that you think the area presents that might be unique to that area?
Letting ourselves be known in the community, you know, is important. How do we let people know who we are? People don't know who the Missouri Synod is, So letting, you know, letting the local people in this area know who we are. It's also my first time in an area like a suburban area. There's no community. You know, there's these little pockets of suburbia in the area, but there's no sense of community in the sense of what it was like in small town America. So getting used to not seeing anybody on a daily basis that you know, how do you interact and connect with the broader populace when, you know, you're pretty spread out? Our congregants come from a long distance in order to come from this to this congregation. Not many people commute less than 15 minutes. We've got individuals who are commuting, you know, 45 minutes to come to this congregation here, and not just one or two, you know, several. A good number of individuals are traveling a half hour or more in order to come to the congregation. So, you know, that presents its issues with how do we reach out to the local community? What do we do in that regard? Yeah.
I see. What are some of the other challenges that might be faced day to day in terms of just personal life? Either what's the weather like? Are there other things that people should be aware of if they're thinking about moving to the area?
Sure. In our area, as far as the weather's concerned, you know, it's a lot warmer than Wisconsin. People were talking last year about winter here, as I endured winter here. Well, I'd like to say that Wisconsin doesn't have summer, and this area, you know, it doesn't have winter. So, you know, it gets cooler, and it might snow once or twice. But so the weather is hot and humid. That can be weathered okay. As a pastor, you know, moving to this area, the pace of life is a lot faster than where I came from in Wisconsin. I'm coming from a blue-collar community to a white-collar community. That's a difference as well. I don't know if that's such a difference with Pennsylvania versus Wisconsin, or it's more of a difference between rural and more populated. So life is fast-paced here, you know, that's a difference too. You know, moving to the area was different because of the housing market. You know, there's a lot of individuals coming into this community, moving into this community, and that means that house prices are a lot more expensive than they are in other areas of the Midwest. So those are some challenges.
Good deal. Now let's talk about what it's like to raise a family there.
Sure. In my former congregation, you know, I lived right next to the church in a parsonage, in a lovely small community. That was nice. We do miss our parsonage. We live around 15 minutes from the church. In my former congregation, I had to drive around 12 minutes to get to the first stoplight. I drive 12 minutes to church every morning, and I go through 10 stoplights. So there's a difference there. Our family has had to adjust. Oh, you know, for 14 years, I have six children, and my oldest is a first-year student at Concordia University in Wisconsin. My youngest is 5 years of age. And we were homeschooling in the Midwest. There were opportunities for Lutheran schools around where I serve, but we chose to homeschool. It worked out well with my pastor life. I could see my kids for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I could just pop home and see them and participate in homeschool life there. So life has changed for us in that, you know, I'm living away from church now, 12 minutes. Things like in the afternoons, in my former parish, I would take my sons or my daughters to shut-in calls. it takes a little bit longer to get back home. I'm not doing that like I used to do. Probably a more family-oriented life where I was coming from. We've got to be more intentional about raising a family here because of the busyness. In my former congregation, I worked a fair bit, but I'm working even harder and longer hours here. So that, you know, that takes its toll. But, you know, I'm still in the adjusting period. You know, as far as our family is concerned, you know, we've had a lot of changes in the past year, with one daughter going to college. And because of kind of that loss of community as well, my second daughter, who's a junior in high school, we decided to enroll in a local Christian academy. So life is good. Congregational life is good. You know, we because of individuals, making it an intentional effort to be a part of this congregation, we've been welcomed warmly by the congregation, and also we find that, you know, the people in the congregation have become our family as well. But there is a lot of opportunities to expose your children to wonderful things in this area, some of the historical things that I've mentioned before.
Excellent. You mentioned homeschooling. What are the homeschooling laws like in Pennsylvania? Are they fairly liberal in their approach, or is it more restricted?
Yeah, my wife would be able to answer these questions better than I would. However, everything in Pennsylvania has more legislation. Wisconsin, it was pretty much, when it came to homeschool laws, you know, you would fill out a form and inform your local school district what you were doing. In Pennsylvania, lesson plans have to be, your lesson plans for the year, overarching plans for the year have to be gone over by a certified public school teacher, and a lot of documentation has to be sent into the district as well. A lot of hoops to jump through. I don't think they actually do much with the information. You know, it's kind of like just checking boxes off. Not that it's helpful for you or for them, but more along the lines of giving them the idea that they're doing something. So, in Wisconsin, we were allowed to participate in sports more recently in the last 5 years in the local community. That's the same here, as far as being able to participate in the public school sports. In addition, we can participate in some of the extracurricular kind of style activities like band and music. However, in Wisconsin, we were able to, if we needed to take a math class or a science class, you know, if there was an approval from the local district, you could enter that class. But academic classes aren't offered to homeschoolers here in Pennsylvania, as best as I understand the law. Yeah.
Good deal. Let's take a moment for a word from our sponsor. At this time, a lot of parents and grandparents are considering keeping their children at home when the government schools open back up in the fall, and I would encourage you to do the same. If you're looking for a curriculum, I would recommend checking out the Ron Paul Homeschool Curriculum. This will teach your children well how to live in the left-hand kingdom, with classes in business, natural sciences, as well as college prep, in addition to all the usual subjects that you would expect from any curriculum, such as mathematics and history. Best thing about this curriculum is that it is self-directed after the third grade, so you don't have to pull your hair out trying to stay a step ahead of your children in the curriculum. If you're interested, I'd recommend checking it out at lutherancartographer.com/homeschool. That's lutherancartographer.com/homeschool. Let's get back to our guest. All right, now let's turn back to the question of Lutheranism there. We've already talked about the historical, how long Lutherans have been in the area, how the Missouri Synod isn't really known well in that area. It's more the ELCA. Are there other things that we haven't talked about yet about what it's like to be Lutheran there that you want to make sure that we touch on?
Sure. A few things. You know, first of all, this the people in this area have a strong there's a strong Lutheran identity, and there's a fair number of individuals in my congregation who are from the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, and even individuals in the parish who have had spouses that have served as pastors in the ELCA or fathers that have served as pastors. You know, when I went over and visited one of the ladies of my parish who's in her 90s, she had a picture on a wall of, it was a painted picture. I think it was an original work of sorts. She had a series of paintings of George Washington, the Revolutionary War, and all of the Lutheran greats that were part of the Revolutionary War. Just looking at that picture, coming from the Midwest and coming from Missouri Synod Lutheranism, was a fascinating thing. We don't have this tie to the history of our country as Missouri Synod Lutherans that the ELCA Lutherans do. That's strange. It creates kind of a different. There's just a different culture and way of thinking about Lutheranism here in this area. In this area, too, you know, the founder of Lutheranism in the United States of America, he wasn't the first Lutheran here, but the founder of Lutheranism in the United States of America was a man named Henry Melchior Muhlenberg. He came over from Germany and organized a lot of the German Lutheran congregations in the area. There wasn't much organization. He put together what we know now as the Common Service. He put together a hymnal, and he created the Pennsylvania Ministerium, the first synod in the United States of America. You know, he's two of his sons who were pastors are buried in Lancaster. I can take you to the cemetery, and you can see where two of his sons, who are influential individuals in the history of the country and also of Lutheranism. Are buried in that cemetery, just a stone's throw. Also, is the 15th president of the United States, a man from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. His name was James Buchanan, and he grew up around this area. Announced his presidency, chosen to be the Democratic representative on the steps of his porch. So you have that in the area, but as far as you know, Lutheranism in this area, there's a decent amount of individuals, you know, from local ELCA congregations that are thinking about leaving their parishes or are concerned about the things that are happening in their congregation. However, making that actual jump of coming to another congregation is particularly challenging when they've been tied to those parishes in some cases for generations. In addition, I think our window is closing rather rapidly on those individuals. I had a gentleman who came from who called just a few weeks ago, and just simply said, "I'm tired of what's happening in the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America. What should I do?" He was probably 80 or so years old. His father was a pastor. You don't have those calls as much, at least I didn't, when I was in the Midwest. You know, we have to understand that people are being catechized in the ELCA to think a particular way and to confess a particular way. This individual on the phone just mentioned, you know, going through a small catechism and looking at what Luther said, the small catechism said about marriage. This isn't going to happen in another 10 years. This isn't going to happen in another 15 years. Our congregation also is populated by individuals who also are coming from various Missouri Synod congregations from the Midwest. As challenges happen in the Midwest with our Lutheran faith as well, the number of those individuals coming to our parish, you know, probably won't be as much in the future. So, challenges in this area are to maintain a strong Lutheran identity, move forward in the future as well, and also, you know, let what we do be known to the broader community.
That makes sense. Now let's turn to what things you would recommend in the area? Let's say you have a friend coming into town. You've mentioned the hiking and the historical sites. What particular things would you say, you got to go check this out?
Sure. Again, I've only been here for less than a year, so still getting to know some of the things in the area. As I mentioned, the 15th president of the United States has a kind of a mansion of sorts, and his property is there, and one can go visit the Historical Society of Lancaster and see that history and wander over and see where he's buried. You know, it's one of those things where he was the president right before Abraham Lincoln. You know, Abraham Lincoln gets a lot of publicity. James Buchanan, I don't think, gets too much. So it's interesting to learn a little bit about his history also. Seeing some things in Lancaster, maybe I wasn't clear there. The congregation in Lititz, that's where I serve, is just a neighboring community to a larger congregation or a larger city of Lancaster, which is an old historic city in Pennsylvania. And it's in the broader context of Lancaster County, which is known for, you know, their Amish and Mennonite community. When a lot of people come to this area, they want to see the Mennonite. They want to see the Amish. And so in this area, people will come. They want to see buggies, going down the road. I can sit here in my office and hear the buggies going by several a day. It's a unique experience to see the Mennonites plowing fields and harvesting their crops. Driving around, you see things like their tobacco crops. There wasn't much tobacco being farmed. I never saw it in Wisconsin. So you see some of those things. Local roadside stands where the Amish are selling their produce or flowers or crafts. Individuals go on Saturdays or Fridays to various Amish barbecues where they invite you to come and they grill some chicken and, you know, have fresh food there for individuals. So the Amish community does a lot in the area with tourism, and many individuals go to these particular things to experience, life in this area. So James Buchanan, Amish stuff, the city of Lancaster itself and some of its historical sites, Appalachian Mountains, just an hour and a half north, that trail comes through. Great to see some of those things. And if you venture a little farther, hour to Gettysburg, not too far to Philadelphia as well, and Baltimore. There's also a Strasburg Rail Museum in the area that's known for their museum. And I haven't gone over to Ephrata. It's about 30 minutes away, but there's a particular Protestant-style cloister, a monastic community. Haven't learned much about them. I believe that they were a celibate community, so as you can understand, they're none of them still living. But this is a very old community, and the buildings are still maintained. When everything opens up again, it's a place that I'd like to see as well.
Good deal. Now, as we start to close out the podcast, I want to make sure to give you the opportunity to tell our listeners about the things that you'd like to send them to, your church's website, places to follow you online. What would you like to send our listeners to?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page, and we post some things on our Facebook page. We have a website as well that details the links to our audio versions of our sermons. And if individuals are interested in following our congregation, they can send their email address to our congregation. We send a weekly email with the links to our YouTube sermons. MCLC Lititz is our YouTube address for our sermons and worship services. We worship at 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings with Bible class afterwards. We also have a Wednesday midweek service at 7 p.m. that focuses on the feast days or the saints. So we have that weekly offering for our congregation. Other opportunities too for gathering include, men's groups, women's groups, so on and so forth. But if individuals are traveling through the area or visiting the area, we'd love to to welcome them to our congregation, to visit, to come to a service, and to be welcomed by our congregation.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time today. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
Yeah, I guess one geographical issue that I was thinking about that's popping to my mind. I know it's a while back that we talked about this, but there's no lakes in Pennsylvania.
That's crazy.
You live in Wisconsin and Minnesota, you know. Minnesota is like, what do they call it? The land of what? 10,000 lakes? And they say that actually there's 20,000 lakes in Minnesota. They only count half of them. Well, Wisconsin has as many lakes as Minnesota, I believe, at least 10,000. And so you see lakes all the time. You see ponds all the time. In Pennsylvania, there's not a straight road. Roads are very small and narrow. They bend and they, you know, everything in the Midwest where I'm from is laid out in a grid. You fly over the Midwest, you see that. You fly over Pennsylvania, you see the difference. It's fascinating. If you make a wrong turn, it's not like you just go to the next road and kind of turn left and you'll get there. You might end up in a different community. This all goes back to these roads being ancient Indian trails, so on and so forth, trading post areas. There's just streams, small streams. The Susquehanna River, some of those things in the area are different geographically. So I just thought lakes were everywhere, but there's none in Pennsylvania. My final parting words, you know, wherever we hang our hat, I was thinking about Psalm 139 this morning. It says, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your right hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. So we've got this wonderful thing called the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we're spread out, but we're united in doctrine and practice, and I rejoice in that. And in this place that I now live, it's very different than where I lived formerly. But the great thing is that we gather around Word and Sacrament, and that's what draws us together here in this congregation, especially in this congregation, as we don't experience a culture like ours in our local community. And individuals all around the Missouri Synod in their various places are doing the same. So we rejoice in that, and we rejoice also in God's promise that wherever we hang our hat, we have that promise from Psalm 139 that, you know, even if we make our bed in the darkest places, even if we make our bed wherever, God is there, and that's of comfort to us.
Absolutely. Amen. Thank you again for your time today. God's peace.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Lutheran Cartographer. For more about the things that we talked about today, visit the show notes page at lutherancartographer.com/40. I encourage you to check out that homeschool curriculum if you're in the market for one, or if your current curriculum just isn't working out for you. That's at LutheranCartographer.com/homeschool. Last, make sure you're subscribed to the podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher or now on Amazon so you don't miss an episode. And while you're there, please leave a rating or a review. Until next time, I'm Nicholas Weber. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you soon.